It's time to talk sports. It's Hacksaw's Headlines, a panorama of the world of sports, stories, comments, and opinions.
Touchdown, San Diego!
Now, here's iconic sports talk show host Lee Hacksaw Hamilton and co-host John Riley.
Who wants to talk sports on a Thursday? We do. From our Dixie Line Lumber and Home Center studios in San Diego, we welcome you to our Thursday podcast as we get ready for a great sports weekend. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, along with my co-host, John Riley. It is the beginning of March Madness. It's the beginning of the baseball season. We got the NFL draft just around the corner. A ton of topics on the table to get covered in the next hour with our Thursday podcast. Our podcast is brought to you by the North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. Somewhere down road, we're all going to need help with our eyes. When it comes time, remember the name, North County Eye Center, Poway and Escondido, been in business since the 1970s. And by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Centers, 9 stores in San Diego to serve you, regardless of the project, inside, outside, on the patio, in the office, think Dixie Line Lumber. John Riley, are there enough topics on the table to talk about today? How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, it's March Madness. This is the Thursday. It's really cooking. And oh my God, the Dodgers story, I can't wait to dive in.
We're going to give you a lot of different opinions. And when we're done telling you what we think, you're going to tell us what you think. Explain to everybody on our live stream, especially the newcomers from our O Canada network, how the fans forum works.
Yeah, so if you have a question or comment for Lee, you know, you have thoughts about March Madness or about the Dodger Padres series in Seoul, or even the Ohtani controversy, which we'll get into, drop your question or comment in the live chat on Facebook, YouTube, or X, and we'll get you involved in fans forum at the conclusion of Hacksaw's Headlines.
And a reminder, we want you to become part of our team. It's called Hacksaw's Insiders Group. You see the address right at the top of the screen. That's my website. Just punch that up, LeeHacksawHamilton.com, and there'll be an orange box right on the homepage. Fill it out with the information you get on our emailing list, so you get alerts for everything that we're doing. We want you to share, tell your friends, everybody that you network with, what we're doing on our podcast, what we're doing with the sports website, and subscribe. That way you'll get all the alerts electronically every time we put something up, and we put a lot of stuff up during the course of the week. John, the baseball season began in Seoul, South Korea. We had the most interesting first game, and then that headline was wiped off the sports pages across America by what happened off the field to the Dodger star, Shohei Ohtani, and this story is far from being told, but what an amazing situation.
Yeah, I want to hear your thoughts on this because I know it's complicated and I want to learn some of the detail.
Showtime involved with a Japanese friend who became his, quote, personal aide, did a lot of work for Ohtani, may have been involved in business investments in addition to working with him, traveling with him, being his spokesman, helping him translate, and also doing video work when Ohtani was in games or in batting practice or pitching. All this when he was with the Angels. He has been with Ohtani for 6-plus years. He is no longer with Ohtani. After the opening game on Wednesday night, the story broke when the Associated Press and the LA Times came upon information from an FBI probe that Ohtani's name had been linked to a gambler out of Orange County. And this thing took off like a wildfire. The FBI probe was a bookmaker, Michael Boyer. Ohtani's name somehow came up in a conversation in which Boyer hinted that Ohtani was, quote, a partner. Most people have the opinion that Boyer was trying to develop some street cred by dropping that name. Well, as the investigation expanded, we find out that Ohtani's personal aide, Ippi Muzuhara from Japan, translator, business partner, investor, is the guy that was involved with the gambler in Orange County. Gambling addiction, huge debts run through Michael Boyer's offshore accounts. And that further they investigated, they found transfers and withdrawals over a 6-year period while he was with the Angels and even up to spring training while he was with the Dodgers. He was a club employee, was paid by the Halos, paid by Dodger Blue because Ohtani wanted him to be part of his inner circle. He lost $1 million a year over the last 4 years. They just discovered in September, October, at the end of the baseball season, $500,000 individual transfers from Ohtani bank accounts to Michael Boyer's bank accounts. He admitted he was a gambling addict. He admitted that he used DraftKings accounts weekly to get started. And now we find out that Muzahara and Boyer are linked to a convicted gambler in Las Vegas by the name of Wayne Nix, who's already done prison time. So there's no doubt that Boyer has a cartel of people who bet with him, and he's had a relationship with Nix in Vegas, who's nationwide known as a gambler. The FBI transcript showed Boyer's accounts had Ohtani's money put into those accounts offshore. Now, the problem is Muzahara has changed his story twice in about 12 hours. Initially, when he was confronted by the Associated Press and the LA Times with this evidence, he indicated, yes, there was a transaction. Ohtani agreed to pick up and wipe out all his debts. 12 hours later, the next morning, he came back and indicated he changed the story that I transferred the money from Ohtani's accounts. Ohtani had nothing to do with this at all. Ohtani has refused to talk to the media. He did have one private meeting with the Dodger executives. The Dodger executives had a closed clubhouse meeting with the Dodger players before today's Thursday game. And nobody was going to talk about what happened inside that meeting. I guess the burning questions that I have, Ohtani, did you give access to your accounts to Muzahara? Muzahara, why did you change your story when you've already been fingered for having this massive gambling debt and everybody now knows where the money came from? It's just an absolutely stunning story to me that it would evolve like this. I asked the question, should Major League Baseball remove Ohtani from the roster and put him on administrative leave until the situation can be sorted out? Because I've done that in the past with guys who got in trouble off the field. Or do they let the legal thing take its course till they can get all the data and all the information? MLB has not yet been contacted by the FBI. So, I mean, I think this is a story of mega proportions as it relates to a superstar. I guess one of the burning questions I have, is Ohtani just stupid? Or was Ohtani standing up for a friend and made a bad decision? We don't know the depths of Ohtani's involvement with the transfer of the money. We know the depths of his working relationship with Muzahara. Just, John, just an absolutely amazing story when you talk about good citizen, great reputation, phenomenal work ethic, and now this? One other sidebar question. This agent is based here in San Diego, Nez Bilello. He's the one who has really done a strong job protecting Ohtani in the transition of culture and life from Japan to here, be a superstar. Everything with Ohtani has been private and secretive. Nez obviously represents the player, has done a great job representing the player. Please tell me, where was the agent while all this was going on for 6 years? Did the agent have no knowledge whatsoever that Muzahara was doing what Muzahara was doing? Does the agent know whether or not Ohtani bailed this guy out? Or was Ohtani an innocent victim who gave access to his accounts to his close personal investment friend? Just an absolutely staggering story. So, John, I've thrown a lot on your desk. Your response when you first heard it, are you as confused now as I am about the fact we don't really have all the story yet? Or is this details still to come?
There's so many layers to this, Lee. I mean, I don't even know where to begin. Let's just say this. First of all, this smells like a cover-up. You know, it smells like, you know, they're trying to protect Ohtani. You know, the Dodgers, MLB, they want to keep him clean. And I think that's why this shifted from a Ohtani, quote, helping out his buddy, which I think is what probably went down, to this being Ohtani had no knowledge, the money was stolen, and they're trying to throw the translator under the bus. That's what it feels like to me.
The translator is already under the bus. His fingerprints are everything. Now the question is, did he transfer the money? Did Ohtani not know the money had been transferred?
Oh,
or did Ohtani's personal lawyer discover this, raise questions with the player, and then the information became fully public?
I don't even know where to begin on this. The Ohtani, I think, was definitely helping out his friend. I mean, that just seems very clear to me. But the other angle to this is interesting, too, because what did he bet on? You know, he betted on apparently not on baseball.
Okay? He bet on everything else.
Bet on everything else. And I think Major League Baseball says it's okay for Major League players or employees if they want to bet on March Madness, for example, and do a bracket. I mean, the guys, they do fantasy football. We know that for sure, the players. But what made this interesting is that he was betting in the state of California where sports betting is illegal, even though it's legal in 40 other states. So, you know, when you're doing DraftKings or, you know, FanDuel, apparently that's not really legal here. But I know that they're like one of my buddies lives in Orange County and he has a bookie and the bookie like private labeled an app on his phone to make bets. And so there's a lot of this underground gambling that's going on. But in my opinion, Ohtani knew what was going down because him and this translator, they're like a merger of one person. They're constantly together. They're confidants that go way beyond just a professional relationship.
But how could Ohtani be so dumb to make payments on gambling debts to a bookie from his own accounts? If you're telling me Ohtani sat at his laptop, went into his accounts, transferred the money, because that's where the paper trail is. Or did Muzahara have access to the accounts? He went in on the computer, used the code, transferred the money himself. We don't know.
Well, that's probably what happened is Muzahara probably moved the money around. This smells like the whole Stormy Daniels thing, you know, as far as who paid who and how it all went down. Again, Ohtani has shown us zero evidence of having any character flaws. Now, granted, he's private, so we don't know the whole thing. This strikes me as the translator got in over his head. He got help from Ohtani. You know, Ohtani probably knew, probably gave him a little slack. Now this is all going to go down. But it makes Major League Baseball seem like a hypocrite on this when they've accept all this advertising from FanDuel's and from DraftKings.
Yeah, concur with you wholeheartedly. And a sidebar to that statement, MLB had to know what was about to be released. And here they are, the opening game of the season, and Rob Manfred's on ESPN talking all about the great things in Korea and Ohtani and what he's meant to the game, and baseball didn't know any of this, or did this happen after the last pitch of the last out of the first game?
Well, I think it caught everybody by surprise, right?
Cow,
I
mean, this came like a tidal wave.
Yeah, I mean, no one saw this coming at all. So my guess is Manfred had no knowledge.
Okay, Fans Forum is built for you. If this topic...
Oh my God. This topic
deserves response. So jump into the chat box right now. You get an opinion on Ohtani, or is it on Muzahara? Where's the agent in all this? Feel free to join us because we'll be taking questions and answers on Fans Forum. We go from that topic to the second surprise topic of the week.
Yeah, Blake Snell lands in San Francisco.
Oh, I like that headline. Giants big gamble. Spending spree is complete. I'm just absolutely stunned it was structured the way it was. Blake Snell, Cy Young Award winner, San Diego Padre, ex-Tampa Bay Ray, two-time award winner, two-year, $62 million deal to go to San Francisco with the right to opt out after the first year. Now, I don't understand this. Somebody needs to explain to the general manager of the Giants, and then you can explain it to me, why you would do this type of deal this way. Because not only are you going to pay him $31 million for the first year of the contract, you have to pay a $31 million tax. So it's a $4 million tax on the first year of the contract. And the Giants give up a second and third round pick and $1 million in international signing money, John, to get him for 1 year. If he comes back the second year, okay, there's your investment. But if he's there one season, one and done, and you pay the $31 million, the $4 million tax on the first year of the contract, and you give up a second and a third round draft pick, which are kind of like gold.
Yeah.
And you lose $1 million in international signing pool. How is that a good business investment? You're a damn Giants fan. Explain your club.
Well, first of all, we knew that the one-year opt-out, that's why the Yankees and the luxury tax, we went through this in detail. Why would the Giants do it? My guess is they want to demonstrate to their fans that they are serious, that they want to win. And, you know, they have been kind of coyly playing this out, you know, for the last few months.
So the price came down.
Kind of. So, you know, I feel kind of bad for Snell because, you know, he thought he was going to make big money. He's kind of gotten screwed in this whole thing, at least as far as the market is going in unexpected ways. Can he bounce back, Lee? Can he rebound? Can he prove it again?
You know, the other idol, he just got to spring training. And he just said last night, out of one side of his mouth, he might need 3 weeks to ramp up to be ready to pitch in a major league game.
I saw that.
So that's five starts, probably.
Yeah, so you're getting a fraction of a season.
Yeah, if he doesn't have a problem. I mean, he came around this morning and indicated, well, maybe I can pitch out of the bullpen to start the season well. So that's where we are there. Now, it's just not Snell. They did the deal to get Matt Chapman, the Toronto Blue Jays third baseman.
Oh, yeah.
They did opt out with him, had to give up a draft pick. They signed Jorge Soler, Miami power hitter, strikeout artist, DH. He's got an opt-out. Signed Jordan Hicks of the Cardinals. He's got an opt-out. The only one that doesn't, that's locked down, is the Japanese or the Korean slugger, Jung Lee, 5 years, no opt-outs. To me, it makes no business sense if you're trying to resurrect San Francisco Giant baseball to sign these guys, give them opt-outs, knowing you have to give up draft picks because each of these guys were given qualifying offers by their team.
Right.
So I do the math, and I wasn't real good in math, but at the end of the day, this does not sound like a good investment for San Francisco.
Yeah, well, the Giants, you know, they had that great, you know, youth movement, you know, when they started winning all the World Series 15 years ago. But since then, their farm system hasn't been that good. I mean, they got a couple of gems in there, but I don't necessarily think they're one of the top-rated farm systems. You'd think they'd want to replenish. But you got to tip your hat to A.J. Preller for doing the qualifying offer. So now we're going to get compensation. I say we. The Padres are going to get compensation from the Giants, and that works out pretty well.
Yeah, a Giant fan just texted me saying, what are we using the term we as it relates to the Padres? What's wrong with you? Okay, let's go from that. You got an opinion. If you're a Giant fan, you're a baseball fan, good investment, bad investment. Investment, big gamble on Blake Snell, San Francisco. Opening week of the baseball season, South Korea. Hold on to the table because I got some opinions about game one and game two, Padres versus Dodgers. And John?
Yeah, I mean, I have a ton of comments as well. I set my alarm for 2:55 in the morning both nights, and I was able to last until about the fourth or fifth inning. I had to go back to bed.
Dummy me, I watched all of it. Two full days of baseball from South Korea. Strangest feeling, as they were getting ready to throw the first pitch on Wednesday, I just had a yearning for a beer and a hot dog.
A yearning.
At 3 a.m. in the morning.
A yearning.
It's interesting. That stadium, Sky Dome in Seoul, 17,000 fans. Didn't look that big to me, and it wasn't that big to me. It looked like an erector set. And then they had the rule, if the fly ball hits the roof, the ball's in play if it falls fair, et cetera, et cetera. Dome was packed with Dodger fans. Everybody was wearing some form or fashion of Dodger blue. I didn't see very many Padre jerseys unless it was maybe in the Padres family section because the wives and some kids were allowed to be on the team charter flight. Anybody see any Padre gear? I didn't see very much there. Korean fans. I was fascinated by the ambience. Korean fans are very polite. They sat there, John. They cheered if there was a big play. First game, there weren't any big plays. Second game, there were home runs, which got everybody excited. And then they sat down and put their hands together and just returned to their seat. Cheerleaders on the dugout. That was a strange look to me. But evidently, that's the way they do it in Japan. That's the way they do it in Korea. I'm sorry. At 3 o'clock in the morning, I can't stand hearing a drumbeat in my head every inning of every game. Dodgers versus the Padres, that's a Pacific Rim tradition. And I just was amazed at, obviously, the outpouring of support for Ha-Seong Kim.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, he played in Korea. That was his home stadium.
Yeah.
There were 56 visions or 56 shots of Ohtani in game one. Every time the camera went there, he was there, fans there, 56 shots of him. I didn't hear much. One time I heard something that equated to the Padre chant, Ha-Seong Kim.
Yeah.
Ha-Seong Kim. I did hear lots of chants, Chan Ho Park. I never heard any chants at all, beat LA. So I was paying attention to all the ambience around the game. I was disappointed there was no Peter Seidler patch on the Padre jerseys for these two games.
Oh, yeah. I saw that in spring training.
Corporate logos replaced them. Now, when the Padres come home for the exhibition games here against Seattle, start of the season, then there'll be the PS with the gold heart. I thought it was kind of classy. They had a moment of silence before the first national anthem, and they talked about Peter Seidler up on the scoreboard. American anthem was kind of different. They didn't have the Korean anthem on opening day. I didn't understand that either. Now, because I'm a broadcaster, and you're linked to a broadcaster, and we watched ESPN on the broadcast, I'm going to give you some opinions here. You may not agree with it. I thought it was unique to have the third broadcaster, I think it was Bruce Kim, who covers Pacific Rim Baseball, as kind of a sideline reporter and do interviews. But he didn't ask any hard questions at all. It was more fluff. It was more cheerleading. I was kind of surprised there. It really made me miss John Smoltz, Buster Olney.
Oh, yeah.
Those type of guys.
Yeah.
You know, Ken Rosenthal in the dugout. That didn't happen opening day. It did happen the second game there. You know, I thought they should have had dugout interviews during the course of this game with the managers. Why did you not have A.J. Preller and Friedman on somewhere during the course of the broadcast? Put them in the broadcast booth and let the play-by-play guys interview them. I mean, because those are two big storylines, what the Dodgers spent and what the Padres can't spend any longer. And there were so many things about the stadium. You know, you could have sent a fan in the stands around and interview the players' wives who made the trip. Mm-hmm. Interview Korean baseball fans. What do you think about Major League Baseball? The stadium was like an erector set. It's just really the way construction's really weird. You know, but there should have been a package there about how unique and how really different this dome stadium is, because it's the biggest dome stadium. It might be the only dome stadium in Korea. I think it's the second newest stadium in the KBO, the Korean League. Now, this sounds a little political. Why not a little brief snippet of history of South Korea and history of what's across the border, North Korea, and that relationship? I mean, there were some journalistic things I thought they could have done that they didn't. I was disappointed in the broadcasters, at least in game one. It was like they're doing a talk show. They weren't doing play-by-play. There wasn't a hell of a lot of insight. There's so many baseball storylines, and you know, and they're just generically talking. I was kind of disappointed in the packaging of the broadcast. You know, nothing there as it relates to the Dodger-Padre rivalry. I mean, for the whole nation to understand what this rivalry is. Now, maybe it's not Yankees-Red Sox, but this is a pretty good rivalry here, most recently in recent seasons. And then they had the luxury of Rob Manfred coming into the booth to kind of sit and do an interview during the play-by-play, and they kept him for half an inning, and all they did was throw softball questions at him. Mm-hmm. Everything is beautiful. Otani to the Dodgers is great. South Korea are expanding. There's so many other bloody questions they could have asked. So I gave them a letter grade of probably C for the first broadcast, because I just think they missed so many journalistic opportunities. You know, it takes personnel to put packages together, but this is ESPN. You got the people. You get them in there a week early and say, okay, this crew is shooting this, and you're going to turn that into a two-minute video report, and this crew do that, and put people in the stands to interview the players' wives and take the tour of the stadium and the restaurants and all that. So I thought they really missed it. I thought the second broadcast, the Thursday broadcast, the Padre victory, was much more concise and probably better packaged. All right, so that's my statement on the atmosphere, my statement on the broadcast. Before we talk about the games, go ahead, your response.
Well, it sounds like you're channeling your inner Chet 40 right now.
Yeah.
You know, as far as how they constructed the whole broadcast package. First of all, I can't listen to Eduardo Perez. I mean, he sounds like a cartoon character.
Yeah.
I mean, he's very knowledgeable, obviously, but his voice is just really strange to me. Carl Ravitch is, to me, kind of a dud, you know? I mean, he's a nice guy, but you really miss Don and Mudd, right? You know, I mean, you miss having some broadcasters that have some personality.
Can you say John Miller, Joe Morgan?
Yeah, those guys were really good, too.
Can you say the guys on TBS, the John Smoltzes of the world?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, those guys, they bring a lot more to the table. I wonder, though, if maybe they were just going through the motions, figuring no one in America was watching it because it was in the middle of the night. I mean, I'm just guessing. But about a few other comments you made. Well, the cheerleader thing is interesting because, you know, the Padres have the pod squad, and we're starting to see some of that where they're leading cheers on the dugout. But these guys have their own own like micro PA system that they use.
Yeah, dance squad.
And they're singing songs and it's great. You know, I used to do business in Japan a long time ago and I went to some ball games in Japan. And it's similar environment where it's a lot rowdier. It's almost like a soccer match where everyone's singing songs and it's a different vibe than America. But I frankly loved everything about this Seoul, Korea experiment. And I hope there's a lot more of it.
Yeah. And I'm sure there will be further expansion. But don't you agree with me? There were packages and storylines that they could have really made this thing really unique and different.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, there's so many. Like you say, you could talk history. You could talk rivalry. You could talk what's going on in baseball. There's a ton they could have done.
Where was Ichiro? Why not him?
Well, yeah, you know, and I think they were just leaning so heavily on Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
It was Shohei this, Shohei that, and then that all blew up in game two.
Okay, let's talk about the games themselves very briefly. Dodgers won 5-2. Padre pitchers gave up 9 walks on Wednesday. The broken glove base hit with Cronenworth kind of spelled the difference, opened the door. Padre stars went 0-14 at home plate in that first game. We got a sneak preview of the Padre bullpen day, and Padre's got a lot of arms they can use, and we've talked extensively about that. Please tell me how slick Mookie Betts is at shortstop.
Oh,
damn,
yeah.
Is he good.
He's just amazing.
Yeah, and I'll tell you the two things that caught my attention at 3 o'clock in the morning. How powerful and quick Ohtani's wrists are. He gets around on pitches. And how he gets down the base paths. I've never watched him go from home to first.
Yeah.
Just like that's a big man thundering down the line. So the game wasn't good. Joe Musgrove did not pitch well. This is work in project. He's not 100% today. Darvish just couldn't control the ball yesterday. So I was kind of disappointed there. I didn't think it was an artistic game, the Dodger win. And then we got to today, and I was kind of amped to see Yamamoto start for the Dodgers. And boy, that did not work out well. You talk about getting overwhelmed. 43 pitch first inning. He threw 23 strikes and 20 balls. He had no location at all. He was missing. And then you could see his mechanics went away. You could see his confidence went away. And by the seventh or eighth batter in that first inning, it was like he was shot putting the ball up there. He had no idea what he was doing. Went one inning, gave up 5 runs, 4 hits, a walk, a hits batsman, and a wild pitch. Now, remember, Yamamoto had an 8.58 ERA in spring training with the Dodgers, and he follows that with this.
Yeah.
And his ERA after one start in the major leagues is 45.00.
45.
So not good. Breakout game from Jake Cronenworth went 4-for-4, 4 ribbies.
Love
Luis
it.
Campusano had 3-for-4. Jackson Merrill can play. 2 more base hits. Xander had 2 hits and 2 RBIs. Today, 26 runs, 32 hits, 12 bases on balls. And by the way, we did mention, and I'm sure I'm going to get heat about this, I did mention Dodger defense being a little shaky.
Yeah.
Max Muncy did not get to 4 ground balls in today's game and was kind of responsible for some of the Padre rallies. And then Gavin Lux wouldn't go through that gave the Padres insurance runs after the Dodgers had kind of stormed back. So I don't think it was a success for the Dodgers. I don't think it was a complete success for the Padres. Yeah, they did split. So your thoughts Wednesday, your thoughts Thursday.
All right, well, let's go in reverse order. The Thursday game, today's game, I was watching Yamamoto blow up in the first inning, and all I could think about was you, you know, because you were saying how he was kind of shaky in spring training. But the Padres just teeing off on this guy, and you love seeing Jake Cronenworth, you know, being productive right there in that number 3 spot. I love that. And I also love the idea that the Padres kept fighting, and they kept, you know, putting points on runs on the board, and then the Dodgers would respond, and then the Padres would respond. It is the exact opposite of what we saw last year.
And I tend to think once it became a bullpen day, once Yamamoto got yanked after the first inning and Musgrove came out at the top of the third, I say, oh, this is going to be a slugfest. And both teams hit the ball against the bullpen and they beat him up. It only counts as one win, but it was kind of unique.
I want to talk one moment about game one and the ball that got through Cronenworth's glove.
Broke the webbing.
So do you say that's an improperly maintained glove and Cronenworth is to blame, or is the equipment manager to blame, or is it just one of those weird things?
Wear and tear.
That's okay.
Probably his favorite glove. He's probably used it since he became a first baseman a year ago. And I mean, I wasn't sure when the ball went by him, did he miss? And then when they did the slow-mo replay, he said, oh, it busted the webbing and went right through.
Yeah.
So, by the way, he got screwed. That was not an error. That was a rocket shot hit that went through his glove because the glove broke.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so, you got to say, if you look at both games, you got to say, hey, for the Padres getting a split, and they could have easily won game one, and they can play with the Dodgers. I mean, this is great to see. I mean, Mookie and Freddie and Shohei Ohtani are tremendous, but, you know, Muncy, question mark. The other thing about Ohtani and his swing, do you ever notice this? It's Ichiro is similar, where they seem to, like, rotate their hips earlier than most American swingers. And then the bat follows the rotation of the hips. And I think that gives them a lot more, you know, whipping power.
Tell you what, you look at that Dodger lineup. I swear to you, every 15 minutes, top of the batting order was there.
Yeah, oh my God.
There's Betts, and there's Freeman, and there's Showtime, and then there was Muncy. Wow.
Yeah, it was that's brutal.
All right, you're a Dodger fan, you're a Padre fan. Jump on board in Fans Forum. Get ready to ask some questions about what you saw. Did you like the ambiance? Do you think ESPN missed the boat? Could have done a lot more journalistically? And you're just responsive where the Dodgers and the Padres are right now. We get to halftime, our Thursday podcast, as we kick off our great sports weekend. Our podcasts are brought to you by the North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. These are professionals in the eye care industry. Whether it is just checkups, new glasses, or contact lenses, or something much more significant like cataracts, glaucoma, or treatment for an eye infection, you need them. They've been in business since the 1970s. When it comes time to take care of your eyes, do what I did. North County Eye Center, Poway and Escondido. And our Thursday podcast, as we kick off this great sports weekend, programming note, next week, start of the rest of the Major League season, our baseball preview. We're going to go division by division. I'll tell you who's going to win and why. John Riley will make his picks, and then I can also tell him why he's wrong. Our baseball preview, American and National League, next week. Of course, we're on a regular schedule, Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific, Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific. Fans Forum chat box is open. You got a question, got an answer, jump in, because we're going to cover a lot more the second half of our podcast. And we want you to become a member of our team. Want you to join Hacksaw's Insiders Group. You'll get all these special emails of all the unique things we're doing. Just go to LeeHacksawHamilton.com, my website. And by the way, check that every morning. It is written. There's a ton of information there. So we go from baseball to the next topic on the table.
Okay.
You're going to watch TV till your eyeballs fall out this weekend.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I've already been catching some of the March Madness action. So we're starting today. It's big time.
Well, big storyline, obviously, in March Madness is who got in and who did not get in. And boy, is there some anger just about this whole storyline, this whole set of circumstances with the selection committee. There's outrage over the field of 68. The Big East, really power basketball conference, only got three schools in. The Atlantic 10 got four. You got to be kidding me. All kinds of excuses. You know, the selection committee said in their press conference, well, the reason some of these other schools did not get in is we had five upsets in the conference championship games in which top-seeded teams got knocked out and did not win their conference. So those top five teams flipped down and took at-large spots. I guess there's some justification there. But, you know, you got Seton Hall, which, I don't know, I think won 24 games. Seton Hall, who beat UConn and Marquette, and Seton Hall did not get in? You're kidding me. You got St. John's. You got Providence. Those are all pretty good teams in one of the rugged conferences in the country, and they did not get in? And by the way, with apologies to Tom Izzo, you took a team that lost 14 games in East Lansing, and you put Michigan State in. You're kidding me. And Florida Atlantic, they lost to bubble teams. And they got in, too. How's that possible? So there's a lot of controversy. And then it's all fueled. It's even made worse when the University of Virginia in the play-in game
that was awful,
got absolutely annihilated by Colorado State. I mean, March Madness, to see a team go 16 minutes without a basket? Without a basket. That's Tony Bennett, UVA. They won the NCAA title just 3 years ago. Boy, has that sucker slipped. Performance like that might lead to a firing the next day, but has not happened in Charlottesville. So there's just a lot of yakking about seedings. And then Mountain West Conference. Nobody paid attention to their credentials. Who the hell are they outside of San Diego State? Why should we seed them higher? Well, you just saw what Colorado State did. Mm-hmm. And obviously what Boise State almost did. Yeah, I think what's missed in all the message about the Mountain West Conference, John, is just the reality that these schools in his conference beat each other's brains out all year. And they'd play really good big men basketball. And they got all strokers and guys who can shoot. And transfer portals helped everybody in the Mountain West. Just not a lot of nationwide recognition. And that's too bad, because I think outside the Aztecs getting the fifth seed, I think the other guys should have been rated higher. Now, at the end of the day, just got to win who you're going to play and keep on playing.
Yeah, well, you know, there's always squawking like this every year, right? Who gets in, who gets out, who deserved to be in. There's also cases like where, you know, Oregon ended up winning the Pac-12. And so I don't know if Oregon would have been an at-large team, or would they? I don't even know.
They were right on the bubble.
They got in, you know.
So Arizona took one of the at-large spots.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of different angles to this. Now, I, for one, you know, I told you I want to expand the football playoffs. I would have no objection of expanding the basketball playoffs. And then we can put a lot of this to bed, and it could be pretty interesting. It could be kind of fun. But so many, like, you know, talking heads and coaches do not want to expand it more than the 68 right now.
Well, we went from 32 to 64, then we went to 68. Now somebody out there is talking 80 to 90.
Yeah.
Why?
Why not?
That's stupid.
No, it's not. So, you know, and that, but I'm following the storylines with you with the Mountain West. And it was great to see Colorado State play great. I mean, Virginia sucked, but, you know, even that Boise loss, I mean, they were still playing, you know, tough guy defense. They were still getting the rebounds. They were playing that Mountain West style of basketball. They just couldn't hit shots. And Max Rice couldn't do the half court heave to get baskets.
Yeah. Now there's fallout because there's so many people were peeved at seedings or peeved about not getting in. And this is terrible. 17 teams, John, rejected offers to go play in the NIT. Yeah. NIT, Madison Square Garden, the Mecca. They didn't want to go. They're so angered at the NCAA, because the NCAA also controls the NIT now as part of this marketing deal. So basketball's got to rethink things. You know, quad one win, strength of schedule, home versus road, that all carries a lot of clout. But you've got all these metrics now that you're taking into consideration, and you still screw the guy that won 24 games.
Yeah. I mean, you're always going to have this with this subjectivity. And they look at the data, but they look at some data one way and other data the other way to kind of rationalize their crazy decisions. You know, this is such a great tournament, great time in for sports. You're still going to have some of this. But you said Michigan State, you know, maybe they didn't deserve to get in. They just beat Mississippi State, if I recall.
They had 14 losses.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's March Madness, baby.
But it is cool, though. I mean, mid-morning, the last game that I saw before we came to do the podcast, Duquesne. Duquesne won their game, first round.
Yeah.
Duquesne has not won a game in the NCAA tournament. They used to be an Eastern power since 1967.
Well, see, this is what we love to see.
Sure.
You know, and if we can have more of these upsets, and by the way, Aztec fans are happier than hell that BYU just went down in flames. But that was an 11 beating a 6.
Okay. So you got an opinion on what they did, what they did not do, who they treated badly, what's going to happen in terms of expansion, what should happen, what should change. Fans Forum, college basketball fans. We're just going to clear the deck, and we're going to do a bunch of these right here at the end. So make sure you jump in. Let's go to what's happening here in town tomorrow.
Yeah, San Diego State going up against UAB in Spokane, Washington, Lee.
Aztecs, so streaky.
Oh, yeah.
And Jaden Ledee, All-American credentials. He's getting voted to all these All-American teams, rightfully so, for a one-man gang. 21.8 rebounds per game, and now all these accolades. Where's the help going to come from? Because the help has been very inconsistent. You know, the old TV show Superman?
Oh, yeah.
Superman had kryptonite that devalued his power. I swear that Jaden Ledee's Superman, his kryptonite is his backcourt. The guards at San Diego State are so streaky and so erratic. Reese Waters, you need your guards to score points. You need your guards to hit drills threes to get the big guys off Ledee and make them change their defense. Reese Waters averaging only 10 points per game, very streaky. He's shooting 40% from the three-point arc, that's decent. Lamont Butler, all this experience, he's averaging only 9 points per game, 30% on threes. Mm-hmm. That's real substandard. Darian Trammell, 7 points per game, 29% on threes. That's terrible. Micah Parrish, who at the end of last season got hot and was an important cog coming off the bench, 29% on three-point shots. And as a team, San Diego State's hitting only 31% of the threes. And Ladie cannot do this by himself. And because he's getting no support from those guys who are his kryptonite, he's having a tough time. It's going to get tougher as this thing begins unless these guards can throw a light switch and find out who they are. Alabama-Birmingham, they're 23-11. They play in one of the weakest conferences in the country, the Southland Conference, averaging 77 points per game. Don't play a lick of defense. They give up 75. Got a 6'9 center from Arizona Western out here in Yuma by the name of Yax Lonborg, averaging 13 points and 8 rebounds a game. Got a good guard, Eric Gaines, is averaging 12. Really undersized. I think the Aztecs are going to mug them in game one. They lost to Clemson, lost to Florida Atlantic, lost to Maryland, and got smoked by McNeese State. So I think San Diego State stomps them. And then they get to play Auburn, which will be that's a whole different beast mm-hmm. when they play somebody from the SEC. And Auburn's a pretty good basketball team with a pretty wild coach.
Well, you know, the kryptonite is a great angle here. I mean, Darian Trammell, when he was at Seattle, that dude was a scorer. I mean, he was buckets, you know. And then he goes through these streaky cold periods. But the Aztecs, you know, with the exception of a few players, have had a history of guys who just can't make shots. Do you think it's the fact that they just recruit defensive-minded players, or is it that they come here and then the offense just doesn't work for them?
Well, I think the offense works. Some of these guys have been proven. Adam Shackle is a pretty good three-point shooter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Malachi Flynn.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there have been guys who've been productive from the arc.
Mm-hmm.
This group, and that's what turns me upside down, these are not newcomers. These guys are proven players, have been in the program or, you know, in some cases, multiple schools, 5 or 6 years.
Well, we've seen Micah Parrish get red hot.
Not this season.
Not this season. You know, and we know Reese Waters' track record. So you just got to hope and pray that it all comes together here in the tournament because, you know, it's one and done.
Yeah, somebody's going to have to show up on Sunday when they play Auburn because they're going to need threes to complement what Superman can do. Last topic on the table. Actually, we've got two more. Let's talk NFL football.
Okay, let's go here. The long list of free agents, it continues, Lee.
The amount of money that's being spent on NFL free agents is just phenomenal. Free agency is now into its eighth day. 199 players have changed teams in the first 8 days of free agency. The latest hot headline, Mike Williams, Charger wide receiver, New York Jet.
Wow.
So he's going to catch passes. Got to stay healthy. He's going to catch passes. He got 1 year, $15 million from the Jets. So Mike Williams goes to play for the Jets. Steelers, not only did they get the two quarterbacks, Pittsburgh also got, I think, a pretty good young receiver. Had a good first season where the Rams got hurt, got lost in the shuffle. Van Jefferson, he just signed in Pittsburgh. And get this one. Pittsburgh this morning was talking to San Francisco 49er star Brandon Ayuk. Now, the Niners have salary cap issues. You know, Debo Samuel's making mega money, and the tight end Kittle's making big bucks, and McCaffrey's making big bucks. They might not be able to re-sign him. And Pittsburgh's got a lot of cap space, although historically the Steelers have not spent a lot of the Rooney money on free agency. But Ayuk, that is a star. And you get him into Pittsburgh? Wow. So we'll keep an eye on that story because he was meeting with them. New Orleans Saints, out of nowhere, went in and took San Francisco 49er defensive end Chase Young. Now, Young had come from the Washington Commanders at the trade deadline. A vibrant pass rusher, then had a bad knee injury. Took him a year and a half to get healthy. Washington got rid of him. He played okay in San Francisco, but he's just had neck surgery. Today, they had neck surgery, but he's already signed and delivered to New Orleans. Rams, looking for a, I don't know if it's an heir apparent to Matthew Stafford, maybe insurance policy. The Rams get Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, and as tainted as his last group of years have been and all the injuries he's had, his career record is 43-20. So in the right situation, I guess he can still play. And he had a long dialogue with Sean McVay, and that's why he decided to go there. And I don't understand this one, or Raider fans aren't going to be happy with me. You know, they did not re-sign Josh Jacobs. That's heavy-duty running back. Had a good 5-year run there, some years better than others. Didn't sign him. They replaced him with Minnesota Vikings running back Alex Mattison. Now, Mattison, he was the heir apparent to Cook. Dalvin Cook in Minnesota had won the starting job, had it for 4 or 5 years, and Mattison was right behind him. And when Cook got let go, then Mattison was supposed to be the guy. Mattison just fumbled the ball all over the field last season. And there's nothing going to get you off a roster quicker than putting it on the turf.
Oh, yeah.
Madison just signed with the Raiders. You can't. Please don't tell me you're a Raider fan. Don't tell me Alex Mattison is equal to Josh Jacobs. I don't understand that. So, some hot headlines in the NFL. And John Riley says,
well, I'm wondering about Mike Williams because, good for him for getting that contract. But Aaron Rodgers should be his quarterback, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so that's a potentially magical situation. Have there been any updates on Rodgers' Achilles heel?
Oh, totally healed. He'll be there in the OTAs. He's doing everything football related. They've gone through a massive remake in the offensive line because they were miserable last season. And they got rid of a number one draft pick, Mickey Becton, and a few others. And they've hauled in some new offensive linemen, and they'll probably maybe do something like that in the draft. So it'll be fascinating. Jets are still looking for other people. They got the running games fine. Now they think they've got at least two receivers, and maybe there's another free agent acquisition coming. But good for Mike Williams. Last topic on the table. This is an awful story, and we touched bases on what was happening in the NHL. We got into a big dialogue a couple weeks ago about why does the NHL need fighting? And there's been a real outbreak of really bad fights within the last 3 weeks. There have been some terrible hits to heads, which have led to suspensions. I mean, talk about absolute cheap shots in the corner and things like that. And now this story. Chris Simon, he's a native Canadian Indian, made his way into the National Hockey League. A very, very popular guy in the room, very rambunctious guy. He was a fighter. He passed away at the age of 52. He was, quote, an NHL policeman in the era when NHL teams had policemen on the rosters. You always have a policeman to protect your stars. Mm-hmm. Don't need that anymore because, quote, fighting was supposed to be out of the NHL. But he started his career with the Philadelphia Flyers, a.k.a. Broad Street Bullies, went to Quebec, was a star with the Nordique, franchise went to Colorado with the Avalanche, was also in Calgary, had 115 fights on the course of his career. I mean, he was a tough guy, 1,100 penalty minutes. He died. He committed suicide this week. Tragic story up in northern Ontario in the Indian Reservation where he retired to. He died, his family said, of acute CTE. They've donated his brain to Columbia University's medical research. And it spins back to the question I have. You know the end result of concussions. You have all these fights that are taking place, all these damn cheap shot hits to the head within the last couple of weeks. And the NHL acts like it's part of the game. Why does it have to be part of the game? Chris Simon's a prime example why the game has to change, period, exclamation point, end of conversation. John Riley says?
I think the NFL is doing a good job trying to, I guess, protect the players, right? You know, they want to, you know, they change the rules. It'd be nice if NHL did that as well. But, you know, I think this guy suffered from, you know, bipolar, right? I mean, you know, he's the life of the party in the clubhouse. Everyone loves him. Then he has these dark moments. But I'll tell you what, when, you know, we were building the graphics for this and I was looking for pictures of him, all the photos of him seemed like a little bit sad. You know, so, you know, this has been going on for a while, is my guess.
Well, end result, CTE.
Yeah.
That's what his family believes.
Big time.
Just because of what's happened to him, personality. It's too bad because he was really popular. And not just because he was a fighter, but he was popular each of the places he played. Hey, our Thursday podcast going towards a great sports weekend is brought to you by North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. When you need eye care, you need North County Eye Center. And by Dixie Line Lumber. 9 locations to serve you, regardless of what the project is in the house, in the garage, out on the patio, or at the business place, think Dixie Line Lumber. It's time for John's favorite part of the show because all his friends now storm to the chat box. It's time for Fans Forum. John, pick them and lose one.
Okay, I mean, the comments on Ohtani are unbelievable. Let's start with Rob. Ohtani's translator was on pace to be the GOAT of bad gambling.
Not bad. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You know, this story comes right on the heels of the NFL mess with the vice president of finance of the Jacksonville Jaguars, who was a gambling addict and stole $22 million from the NFL club.
Yeah.
You know, and when this story first broke about Patel, the vice president, I said, how the hell did nobody not know about this within the Jacksonville organization?
Yeah.
And how did this not know anybody? Nobody had no knowledge. This guy was filtering money from Ohtani's accounts. And again, we don't know the rest of the story in terms of Ohtani would give him his passwords and access to his private accounts.
Wow. Wow.
So There's more to come on the story for sure.
Yeah, there's going to be a ton more. Here's one from Dodger Baseball. Says, would Bauer be a bigger distraction than Ohtani gambling gate?
Well, Bauer, I don't know. We've talked about this recently. Bauer just signed a deal to pitch in for Mexico, a touring Mexican team. He's going to pitch 5 games.
Good.
And he's being scouted. And actually, they're playing, what was it? They're playing in New York or they're playing in L.A.? But scouts have not shown up to watch him throw. So he's still on the outside. It may well be that he's going to use this to actually sign a summer-long contract to probably play in the Mexican League because doesn't seem to have any offers and doesn't seem to have any interest. And the last time he pitched in an exhibition game, there was not one major league scout there to watch him pitch.
Oh, the dude is blackballed, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just ridiculous. And so many teams need pitching. Moving on. All right, let's go here to John. And he says, baseball banned Shoeless Joe Jackson, banned Pete Rose, but all sports have their hands out to accept gambling revenue? What the heck did the powers that be think was going to happen?
Yeah. You know, the other thing that turns me off, and I'm sorry, I'm old school. Maybe I'm purist. Maybe I'm stupid. You know, do you ever watch on the ESPN broadcast now? During the course of the play-by-play, they start talking about the odds that this might happen or this did happen or – do you ever watch that?
Oh, yeah. And even in the score bug, they show like the percentage or the probability they're going to win the game.
Jeez.
Yeah.
So in the fourth inning.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're projecting.
I mean, you're pandering to gambling addicts.
Oh, 100%. You know? And so they got to find a way to make these two be simpatico because right now they're screwing it up.
I'll really be intrigued to see what kind of decision they make as to Ohtani's involvement with his personal aide and whether the aide took the money out of the accounts and transferred it to pay off the gambling debts or whether Ohtani did him a favor and Ohtani did it.
Hey, let's move on here. We've got Dave. He says, I love the Padres getting a hard-on about this. Settle down, clowns. Nothing's going to happen to the face of the league. When's the parade for beating the Dodgers today?
Oh. Last I checked, dude, it's only March. A lot of games to be played, but... how should I say this without offending half the world? It's early in the season. I'm concerned about Darvish. I'm concerned about Musgrove. Because if they can't be you and can't be Java Joe, this is not going to be the same pitching staff. And they did have one really good game at home plate versus a bullpen day. But the Stars were 0 for 14 in the first game. So let's not order World Series tickets yet. Dave.
You Dodger fans just love popping off. And yeah, I mean, when the Padres, when was it? Was it when they beat him in 2020? I think it was the COVID year. Or did they play?
No,
the
2022.
In the 2022, they defeated
him in the playoffs.
Yeah, but I think in 2020, when they made the playoffs in the COVID year, there was a, you know, kind of a fan ruckus out on the gas lamp, right, that they made the playoffs. So the Dodgers love to poke, but, you know, there's a lot to poke back on the Dodgers right now.
Okay, that's from Padre fan, ex-Giant fan who got exiled out of San Francisco. Next topic.
Okay, here we go. This is from Bruce. It says, where are Hacksaw's glasses on rattled? I'm rattled that they're not on his head.
They're right here. Courtesy of North County Eye Center, Poway and Escondido.
There you go. All right, here we go. Kevin said, Snell is still not on a team, LOL. His head is too big and wants too much. But he's on a team.
Well, he's on a team. He just signed with San Francisco, and he'll go to the front of the rotation with Logan Webb. They've got three other really young arms. They don't have any depth whatsoever. They tried really hard to get players to come there, and most guys didn't want to go. Now, they did, you know, they did all these opt-outs, which I tend to think is really bad business. You know, as I detailed to John didn't take notes. That means he's ignoring what I'm saying. But as I detailed that they have to give up $4 million in a tax payment in addition to the $31 million he gets the first year, and they have to forfeit second and third round draft picks and have to forfeit $1 million signing international money. That's a lot of money out the door with the risk that Snell could walk a year from now and next spring training be in somebody else's camp. I just wouldn't do business that way.
Well, I think about it from Snell's perspective because he is a bit of a head case. So how is he handling this? I mean, he's clearly been pushed to the side. He had to settle for a deal that was a lot less. People are questioning if he's really that good. I mean, he's got to prove it to a lot of different people. And if this season doesn't go well for him, it could be trouble.
Yeah, if his ERA is 7.32 and we get to May 15th, there might be some howling there about that. But that being said, let's not negate what he did in Tampa and let's not turn our back how phenomenal he was. What, 1.20 ERA from May 1st to the end of the season with the Padres? I mean, that's dynamite pitching.
It is. But I'll tell you what, Giants fans aren't necessarily, you know, having a parade, you know, down Market Street. Because my buddy up there, he said of all the big name free agents, Snell was the one he was least interested in. And I get it. I understand.
Erratic.
Yeah,
that's
he is.
We carry on.
Oh, carrying on. Okay, I think you already commented on this, but this is a good topic anyways. Tim says, thoughts on Musgrove's performance and health status? Yes, it's essentially still spring training, but he didn't seem to look right today.
Well, I don't think he's looked right at all. You know, he had, what, two or three bad outings. He had one decent outing, and then he kind of got banged around today. Couldn't locate his pitches. It's just a process to come back from a shoulder issue. Now, granted, he didn't have surgery, but he obviously had deterioration in the shoulder capsule. Those are serious injuries. So let's just be patient with him and let him build, and hopefully he gets back. And I was kind of disappointed in Darvish. He just could not locate hardly any of his pitches in the first start on Wednesday. It's early. It's only two games into the season. We'll just see and trek as they go. And, you know, now we're going to look forward to see what they're going to get from Dylan Cease in the number three slot. And Michael King was pretty competitive outside of the home run ball he threw today. Boy, he's fierce. You see, he was so pissed on the mound.
Yeah, it's awesome.
He was gnashing his teeth. You know, and then we'll see what happens with Johnny Brito or Vasquez or the insurance policy. But, you know, if we can get you and Joe back to what you and Joe were, and now you add these guys and you're nine deep in the bullpen, I think you got yourself a pretty good pitching staff. But, you know, Darvish isn't back yet, and Musgrove looks farther behind Darvish.
Yeah, overall, I'm encouraged. I mean, I think what we saw, especially with Cronenworth, saw with Jackson Merrill, there's a lot to like here. Musgrove and Darvish, they'll be fine. They're just going to have to build up.
You just keep cheerleading from left field.
Well, I'm like one of those Korean cheerleaders on top of the dugout yelling around.
Move on.
Okay, moving on. Let's go here to Kevin. I served in the military in South Korea. They are great people.
They really are. I was so amazed that we did our segment. I was talking about the ambiance of the game. I was so amazed at how polite they were. I mean, you compare that to Padre-Dodger games at Petco Park, L.A. sucks, or anything related to the Philadelphia Phillies at Citizens Bank Ballpark. Mm-hmm. Such a different environment. They enjoyed it. I mean, it's great. Baseball will go back there. I could see them further expanding. And so I think it was a great experience. Tough experience of travel. Those players, after traveling there, we did the itinerary, how bad it is to get there. And now traveling all the way back on a 14, 16-hour flight coming home. And then you got to finish up the Cactus League schedule and then open the season. So the wear and tear factor, I mean, I don't do jet lag well. I don't think I could do that jet lag ever.
Well, Tatis was saying his legs were barking,
yeah.
You know, and Machado was looking forward to going home and sleeping in his own bed. So it's got to be rough. But, you know, you got to love, like you say, the politeness of the Koreans, you know, and it's obviously a generalization, but you bring the sport to new cultures and new people. Not only are you introducing them to baseball, well, they know about baseball, but you're introducing more to the American stars. But on the same token, American baseball fans are being introduced to cultures around the world. And I think that's ultimately a good thing, you know, as far as people getting along.
Growing the sport and the understanding. Look at how many Pacific Rim Asian American players are on Major League rosters now.
Oh, yeah.
There's a ton of talent. I mean, if you thought the bidding war for Yasu Yamamoto was something, what do you see next year when Sasaki, the young pitching sensation, high school kid, is coming? Because he's coming. He's not going into the Nippon draft.
No. But you know what? This is happening everywhere, and all sports are expanding internationally. So this is all good.
I know you're just waiting for roller derby to go Argentina.
Yeah.
Okay, move on.
All right. Well, this is a funny comment here from Junior. Known Yakuza member Shohei Ohtani. Like he's in the mafia in Japan.
Oh. I'll tell you, I'm waiting for the depths of the story to come out because there's a lot more story to we're going to have to learn. And then, I mean, if Ohtani is implicated that he knew and he did this nonetheless, then there's got to be some discipline action against Ohtani if he's paying off somebody else's gambling debts, whether it's his best friend or not.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm not so worried. If he's helping out his friend that got into trouble, I'm okay with that. I mean, I think it's fine.
It's gambling.
Ohtani is not gambling. He's not gambling on baseball. He's not gambling on, you know, the games he plays in.
He's giving money to a gambler who's betting on sporting events.
Right. He should have written a check to the translator, and the translator wrote the check to them. He should have covered himself, but, you know, this is just a nuts story.
Okay.
Let's move on. All right, here. This is an interesting question from Roberto, and he says, can the Padres lineup perform with Cronenworth batting third going forward?
Well, based on Thursday's game, John's already voted that in, yes. You know, my reality is Pallett's only two games. You know, and he was hitless in the first game and struck out twice and had the equipment malfunction at first base. So I'm not ready to order World Series tickets yet just because you won a slugfest in bullpen day against the Dodgers. But let's see if, you know, the one thing I noticed today, Jake is spraying the ball. He's driving in different places because I tend to think recently, in the last year or so, and he's had two substandard seasons in a row, it was like he's trying to play the power game, he's trying to pull a lot of stuff. And when Jake first came up, he was just putting the ball in play, and that's why he hit 280.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see if he's made some adjustments, if he's learned, because I think the scouting reports have learned about him.
Well, if he can make it work, the number three spot in the order is perfect.
Yep.
You know, because he's, you know, got the lefty righty thing going on in the lineup, and he got Machado behind you to protect you, you know. So if he just can do okay, I think it'll be a really productive move.
Okay. Anybody out there got opinions on March Madness? Anybody wants to talk NFL free agency? We'll talk about this tragic story in the National Hockey League. John, go ahead.
Okay. Let's talk March Madness here. Can San Diego State make another run?
I think they pound UAB. UAB doesn't play much defense. UAB has no size whatsoever. But then they get to play Bruce Pearl. They get to play Auburn. Auburn's got firepower. They got a former Aztec. Auburn beat some pretty good people during the season in the Southeastern Conference. And the fact that there's kryptonite on the floor, which impales Jaden Ledee, because his guards have to score. They have to hit threes. They have to make a difference offensively. And more times than not, the second half of the schedule, those guards did not show up.
They didn't. No, it was a real tragedy. Can they make another run? I say they can. I mean, because they should beat UAB. If they play their game, they should take care of Auburn. Then you get the Sweet 16, the number one overall seed. But they did that last year, and they beat Alabama. So why not again? I mean, why not?
Well, to get out of the bracket, they got to go through UConn.
Yeah.
That ain't going to happen.
Well, they beat Alabama last year. They can beat UConn. I mean, granted, it's going to be a stretch. It's going to be a reach. But can they go on another run as a five seed? Absolutely, they can.
Yeah, don't think so.
It's March Madness.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, let's
You're
move
just
on.
Big Duquesne fan.
Yeah, the
all.
Duquesnes are good. Here's back to Joey. Hey, is there any way that the Washington Commanders, New England Patriots, or Arizona Cardinals trade that pick so the Raiders can trade up and get Jaden Daniels?
Well, Arizona's shopping the pick. It really looks right now, obviously, Chicago is going to take Caleb Williams. Bear people were at Pro Day at USC yesterday. Washington has worked out Drake May from North Carolina, and despite what some of the critics are saying, I think they're going to take him. So now the question is, what does New England do at three? I mean, is it Jaden Daniels? Or is he a bit of a project, bit of a gamble? He was a one-man show at LSU and before that at Arizona State. His statistics are phenomenal, but there have been a lot of quarterbacks in a league who have been good statistically that don't do all the other things intellectually you need to get done. So I'll be fascinated. But Arizona said this morning that they've got at least four or five trade offers from teams that want to jump up. But, you know, the Raiders are drafting 11, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to go from 11 to 3 or 11 to 4, you got to overpay. And do the Raiders want to give up this year's number one and next year's number one, or this year's number one and a two and next year's two? I mean, the price to make that big a jump, if you're going from 6 to 4, that's a different price tag than going from 11 up.
Well, their current quarterback was Aiden O'Connell, right?
Or from Purdue, rookie.
Yeah, so what are your thoughts on him?
Managed games. He was okay, but he didn't scare the hell out of anybody that I know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then they turn around and they make this deal to get this next quarterback coming in the front door. Who knows if that's going to work? And it kind of goes against the grain of what they said a month ago is we don't want a Band-Aid approach at quarterback. We want a quarterback for the future. And it leads me to believe maybe they'll try to make a trade. But, you know, what do they got personnel-wise they could afford to trade that you'd be willing to give up in addition to your number one pick? That's the only way you can, if you have to go from 11 to 3, you have to give something else that's significant. Well, what is that significance? I don't think they got a lot of significance on defense outside of Mad Max. You're not going to trade Crosby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the running back's gone. It's interesting because I don't know that they've got enough assets and resources to actually do a significant jump up. Now, you know, maybe this is all smoke. You're not supposed to smoke inside, but maybe this is all smoke in the draft room, and maybe they're really zeroing in on Bo Nix or zeroing in. I was told that they really like Michael Penix from Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then J.J. McCarthy is still in play, too, and I don't know if they're linked with McCarthy or not. We don't know because everybody's going to do individual workouts with the Michigan quarterback, so we'll get a much better understanding. I'd say within 2 weeks, we're going to know how the dominoes are going to fall.
Well, I think the Raiders shouldn't trade up. I think they should keep their picks. Penix would be interesting, but he's injury prone, especially when he's at Indiana. So I don't know if that's going to work. Bo Nix, maybe, you know, so we'll see.
I mean, Bo Nix put up phenomenal stats. He's more of a systems quarterback,
mm-hmm.
but you can win with a systems quarterback. Brock Purdy's kind of shown that.
Right. Well, and so did Jimmy G a few years ago.
Yeah. Before he got dinged up.
Okay, moving on. Let's go here to Chris. And this is funny, I think. And for the next couple of hours, I want to drink a beer in my bathrobe and have a hot dog with you. It's 3 a.m. Let's go to the ladies' line.
My goodness. I mean, it was weird. I was sitting there. They were just starting the game on Wednesday. And I like the ambiance of ballparks and games and the smell and just the vibe. And I just thought to myself, damn, I wish I had a beer and a dog right now. And it was 3 o'clock in the morning. I think my wife was going to come downstairs and want to cook for me. But
yeah, it's interesting time. And my wife thought I was crazy for waking up in the middle of the night to do it. But it's like a memorable event.
That's right.
But that was a weird stadium because there was no like stands in the outfield, were there?
No.
You know, so it was like a short porch or something.
It's like an Erector Set stadium.
Well, it was. Yeah, it was kind of odd that way. But, you know, I saw a lot of Padre gear in the stands. But you're right. It was leaning more towards the Dodgers.
Everybody's got $500 in their pocket to buy a Dodger jacket because everybody was wearing Dodger gear. And there's no doubt. I mean, the Dodgers, historically, they were one of the first ones to do it. Bring them from Japan. Do it. Bring them from Korea. Do it. Bring them from Taiwan. I mean, those guys who came to the Dodgers, starting with Nomo and Chan Ho Park, those guys are revered back in their home country.
Oh, they are. Yeah, I mean, that's very clear. I just love it all. So the Padres and Dodgers are coming home. And then when do we start up again?
Well, they got the Mariners for 3 games at Petco Park, the Padres do. Dodgers come home and they'll play a freeway series with the Angels. And then does baseball start the 28th?
Something like that.
Yeah. It's like next Thursday, week from today, I think.
Wow. Isn't it ridiculous that the Mariners are the Padres' rival? I mean, it's stupid. I mean, who else would you pick? I don't know. Okay, let's move on here. Let's go to Steve. He says, Hacksaw, what's up with hockey in SoCal? Looks like another postseason bust.
Well, the Kings have got goal scorers. Are those guys all going to score simultaneously? The most important time of the year, the playoffs? We'll see. Kings are not as strong in goal, and that's a big, big issue. Just got to keep their guys healthy. This Ducks situation's terrible. Losing streak is now at 7 in a row. They're going to wind up with either the first or second pick probably in the NHL lottery. They've been beset by injuries. Trevor Zegras has been out with his broken ankle forever. He's just started full-time skating, so maybe in a week he'll be back. But their season's lost, and they've had so many injuries. Because I'm a hockey guy, in my heart, I think the Ducks, we're all going to wake up one of these years, and they're going to have all these good kids are going to grow together, and they're going to be okay. But geez, from getting point A to that point B, seems like forever. And just when you think they're stockpiling these layers of high draft picks who can play at the NHL level, they all get hurt. It's just bad luck.
Bad luck, yeah. It sounds that way. I mean, when was the last time the Ducks were in the playoffs?
9 years ago.
Nine.
And, they had the nice Stanley Cup run.
Yeah, they did.
With Trevor Solani and the Niedermeyer brothers came, and they traded, and they made all these bold moves. And the team got old, and the team got salary cap issues. And then they missed on a whole pile of picks right at they were coming off the Stanley Cup year. So I'm hoping they flip it and turn the corner, but that's easier said than done, and it's not going to happen 2 weeks from tomorrow. I guarantee you that.
Hey, let's go back here. They got some more NFL for the Chargers. Hey, so do you think Justin Herbert can be successful with no wide receivers?
Well, they're going to run the ball first, which leads me to believe, although there are people doing mock drafts with the opinion, they're going to take an LSU wide receiver Neighbors with the first pick. I don't think they're going to get access to Marvin Harrison. But I think because they spent the money they did on Gus Edwards from Baltimore, they got a new center who is a starting center in Carolina to fix the offensive line. And where they're drafting at five, they're going to get their choice of the best offensive lineman. Now, could they trade back? Could they go from 5 down to 10? Maybe even the Raider pick? You can deal with the Raiders? But, that's a gamble, because if the kid from Penn State and a kid from Notre Dame are the top two tackles and they're going to be dominant players, you don't want to trade too far out of the fifth slot because you might not get either one of them. So I tend to think that they're going to take a tackle. I think you can go get speed receivers anywhere in the first group of rounds, but you can't get a stud who's going to come in and play 10 years for you at left tackle or right tackle. So as we sit here today, unless something radical happens in terms of a crazy trade offer, I think they take an offensive lineman, which means they run the ball, and then they'll develop receivers. You can go get receivers in the second and third round. You can still do it in free agency, too.
Well, who are the receivers that are left now?
In free agency?
No, on the roster. I mean, you got the kid from TCU, Quentin Johnston.
Right.
Who else?
Josh Palmer.
Palmer is still
pretty
there.
Good player. Uh-huh. Jalen Guyton is coming off the knee injury. Played spurts, played okay. That's not enough.
No, and then the tight end they got is more of a blocking tight end,
but
right?
He can catch passes. Disley came from Seattle. So there's still guys out there to go get. And you can also address it in the second and third and fourth round of the draft. You can go find Darius Davis, the kick return guy, is going to be a slot receiver this year.
Oh, yeah. That'll be interesting.
So there we are. Okay, a couple more here before I go to social media.
Okay. just the comments of some of these people. Pete Rose deserved a suspension for his bowl cut. A grown man. Everyone's got an opinion. Oh, let's go to social media. We'll get some good comments in here. All right, let's go Dodgers. And this is from William. And he says, how about the D2? So bad, Betts had to move to shortstop just to hide Muncy at second base. I think he meant Lux. Arizona going to run all over this slow bunch.
Oh, we're going to do our baseball preview next week. I'm sure there'll be some people who won't be real happy with me when we preview the American and National League races. Dodgers got problems. They got infield problems. Max Muncy is not Justin Turner. And I thought Turner was a really competitive guy at third base. But Max looked lost. I mean, he just wasn't reacting. He wasn't getting to balls. He wasn't getting down for balls. And yet there were four balls that got by him today that triggered Padre rallies, and then you got Lux, and he's an experience now trying to throw from second base to first base. You know, thank goodness Freddie Freeman's 6'5" because he's doing this and balls bouncing in front of him. So there's something psyche about Lux, and he's got the case of the yips. And he says, it's not. Well, I saw you throw from shortstop. You made three errors and threw four of the balls in the dirt in the first half of the exhibition schedule. So they got defensive problems. And all you needed to know is to see the sneer on the face of Dave Roberts in the dugout.
He was pissed.
When Muncy never got to a ball he should have had.
Yeah.
So they got work to do.
That was the one that went over the bag, right?
Yeah.
The good news, if you want to look at it from a good news perspective, for the Padres, is they were smoking the ball and hit it really hard at Muncy. But how old is Muncy now? He's up there, right?
34, 36.
Yeah, yeah.
But he still hits, got power, but...
But he hits like 220.
Yeah, last year they hit him at second base and hit him at first a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So... Next question.
All right, let's talk a little Raiders here from 4XRLA. And he says, Lee is being too hard on the Raiders. Running backs are expendable, and Renfro was a non-factor on offense. Getsy's going to be a big disappointment as OC. Lee's eyes are watering from reading the fine print on his transaction tracking sheet.
Well, I'll tell you what. 199 free agents. My eyes are about to fall out of my head reading all this roster information about these players. And I mean, I know most of these players and a little bit of their background, but that's an awful lot of guys to try to keep track of. I don't understand. They gave Renfro all this money and then they lose him in the shuffle. They don't use him. They don't use him correctly. He's a really good slot receiver. He's in feistiness and all that. And they just stop throwing to him. You know, and you can't tell me they got a zillion great wide receivers. Granted, Davante Adams, and granted, they had the tight end Waller, then Waller kept getting hurt, and they finally got rid of him. But you paid him $11.5 million over the last two seasons. Why aren't you throwing the ball to the guy? I don't know. I don't understand why the Raiders do what the Raiders do.
Yeah, I mean, Renfro was a hell of a player at Clemson. I remember him. And it's amazing that his NFL career hasn't been more special, but he does seem like that perfect slot receiver type of guy,
and
right?
He's tough. Just run that junk across the middle and take the blow and catch the ball. So he hasn't signed yet. I think he's going to take a huge pay cut, but that's a good receiver out there.
I agree. Now let's move on here. Let's go talk a little Padres. And this is from Sean. He says, someone check on Lee. He actually complimented the Padres.
I'm complimentary when it needs to be complimentary, and I'll critique them when it needs to be critiqued. Please tell me next time you're going to hit us with something in the fans forum. Give me a specific of what you disagreed with. Just don't make a generic comment that bad dude. always down on the Padres. I mean, a year ago this time when I said they were going to win 98 games, you weren't down on them. And I just, John and I on Monday, we were talking about who's going to finish. I got the Dodgers finishing first. I had the Padres finishing second. I got the Padres going 90-72. There's no negative spin to that, is there?
Well, I'll tell you what. The people on social media sometimes dog you because they think that you're negative about everything.
Nah.
No, but what I see, and I saw this even before we did this podcast, you just take shots. I mean, and you're direct, and you do the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Here's the information. This is my opinion on the information.
Exactly. You know, but the funny angle to this is that how the fans are all trying to read between the lines to figure out, are you really a Dodger fan? Maybe he's really a Padre fan. You know, they're all, and they do that with all the announcers when they're on TV and on the radio.
Oh, bias. Everybody's got bias. I got a podcast. That's all I care about.
Okay.
Okay, let's do one more.
One more. Okay, let's talk Chargers. This is from another one from Sean. He says, everything they did was necessary evil. Consider it cleanup for Telesco going in 2 years ago, signing everyone at market price. I hated to see Keenan go, but a 31-year-old wide receiver who has not played a full season for 2 years is not worth $18 million.
Well, at the end of the day, other two stars gave back money to help him with the cap. And we're not talking about taking a 50% pay cut. We're talking about, in Keenan Allen's case, taking a $4 million cut. Bosa gave up $4 million. Khalil Mack gave up $7 million. Why would you not do that to stay in a great situation? And you're going to Chicago, which will have a rookie quarterback. Granted, Caleb Williams looks like unbelievable talent. But Chicago hasn't won bleep in a long time. And it's cold and it's windy. And you left California, where you're from. And I like Keenan Allen. He's a self-made man. He deserved everything he got. But that's the way the cap works. Somewhere down the road, when you're north of 31 years old or there are injuries, you got to give up some money to help the team get players. And if the two stars on defense could do it, why could the star on offense not do it?
Would you take a pay cut to help out the corporation you're working for?
Depends who the corporation was. I work for a lot of bad people.
Yeah.
Not in my lifetime. But at the end of the day, you have to evaluate the situation as it now stands. How much money do you need? He's made a ton of money.
I just see him.
He's going to Chicago. Now, granted, they're going to have Caleb, and they got DJ Moore, who came from Carolina. They may have two 1,000-yard receivers lining up with Caleb Williams now in Chicago. But you can't throw the damn ball in December. It's so cold and windy and snowy. And why would you leave the sunshine? And I like Keenan Allen. A lot of respect. Self-made individual.
Oh, big time.
He came from Cal with knee problems, and outside of taking some big hits when he got blown up and got hurt, spleen and all that, he's been a great player. I don't know if he's probably a Charger Hall of Famer. I don't know if he's an NFL Hall of Famer, but he's had a nice career.
Yeah, I don't critique him at all for, you know, demanding the trade or refusing to give up money. A contract's a contract, man. You know, this is his livelihood. I see, you can't blame him for that. You can't expect that he should sacrifice. Now, Tom Brady did that, right? You know, he took less money so he could get more stars around him. And he was obviously going for the legacy. There ain't no legacy if you're a Charger player the way they play. So take the money, man.
Hey, listen, we hope you have enjoyed our Thursday podcast going towards a great sports weekend. We do this thing Monday at 1 o'clock Pacific, Thursday at 1 o'clock Pacific. Ton of topics on the table. If you have never followed what I write on my website, just check it out right now, LeeHacksawHamilton.com. It's written. It's fresh every morning. Make sure you join our Hacksaws Insiders group. And of course, we want you to subscribe so you'll get the alerts every time we put something up on the YouTube channel, even if it's at 2:58 in the morning waiting for the Padre-Dodger game to start in South Korea. Our podcast is brought to you by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Center Stores, 9 locations to serve you, and by North County Eye Center, Poway and Escondido. John, when I see you Monday, your eyes are going to be going doot, doot, doot.
Yeah,
I mean, watch basketball. You'll OD on basketball.
And besides waking up at 3 a.m. two nights in a row to watch baseball, this is best time of the year, man. The opening rounds of the NCAA.
Have a great sports weekend. We'll see you come Monday.
Looking forward to it.
And you have a great sports weekend. Thanks for joining us on Hacksaw's Headlines.
Join us again for Hacksaw's Headlines on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. And find the audio version on your favorite podcast app.
Touchdown, San Diego!
For more content, go to LeeHacksawHamilton.com. We'll be right back.